Right, hello and welcome to another episode of the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast by two brothers about all things football in Portugal. You're listening to myself, Albert, and as always, I am joined by my brother Barney. How are you doing, Barney? How's things?
Yeah, things are good. I don't often get to watch football on a Monday night, but it fell into my lap last night where I managed to... Well, maybe people don't want to know, but I had a bath and managed to watch the Sporting game, and it was just a treat because I hadn't listened to Con Murphy for a long time, and it was just like, it was good. It was, yeah. So, no, I'm feeling good. How are you?
Very good. It was a good game. And we have a very special guest on the podcast, another debutant on the Long Ball Football Podcast. It's our pleasure to welcome Ricardo Souza from the Remato Cruzado podcast. Ricardo, how are you, sir? It's great to have you on the show.
Really excited to be here. To be honest, and a bit nervous, of course.
There's nothing to be nervous about. Yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun. And just quickly give you an opportunity to introduce yourself and the show and where people can find you, because you do have a great Twitter account, very analytical, and also a great podcast as well.
Well, thank you very much for your words. So you can find me on Instagram and Twitter, where I have different approaches to the content. Instagram is more formal, where I highlight some of the games that occurred. However, on Twitter is a bit more depth, is where, as you were talking, a more analytical type. Because Twitter is more easy. You can comment various times. You can highlight some things that are happening within the game. Some particular role that a player is doing from the first half to the second half, for example, is something that I really like. And the most important thing about the project, Remato Cruzado, as you with an accent, with a Portuguese accent, is to highlight the positive things that exist in a Portuguese league, which is something that normally tends not to be highlighted by the native speakers. I was born within this culture where we criticize everything day in and day out, with TV shows criticizing the referees or the clubs, saying they aren't good enough. And however, I am trying to invert that culture by highlighting the players, highlighting the clubs, and sometimes the referees, because we have some good referees, despite people not talking about it.
True.
And another thing that I like to do is to go with my friends to visit the stadiums, which is a thing that we have to visit clubs we are not affectionate by, which is an experience that I advise you to take someday for the ones who are listening to us at the moment. It's something that I really like, to be at a stadium from a club that I don't have particular love or sympathize, but I'm here, I'm there with my friends, watching the game, analyzing and experiencing, because sometimes you have really different experience.
Ricardo,
and it's something...
Yes, Ricardo, yes. What was the last stadium you went to?
Ooh, I think it was Porto, the European League, the Europa League game against Hoffenheim.
Nice.
No, it was AVS. It was AVS versus Sporting.
Nice.
It was a draw, the one-on-one draw.
A very entertaining game, yeah.
Very entertaining game. And it's something that I do week in and week out with them.
Oh,
it's
nice.
Really funny. Sometimes we go to Vitória Stadium, then we to Braga. We've been to derbies, the Minho derby between Braga and Vitória. Absolutely amazing atmosphere. And then we have games that turn on to a nil-nil. For example, I remember Famalicão against Moreirense last year, and it was a really good game, but we didn't have goals. It's those experiences that we have and that I like to highlight within the project, because we have good players, good football, not always, of course, but I'm trying to highlight what is positive about Portuguese football.
Absolutely. I think that's why we're such big fans of of what Ricardo does, because that's what we try and do as well. And if you do follow Ricardo, you'll see also that he spends a lot of time covering not just the big three teams, but the smaller teams as well, which is also something that resonates with us very much so. So a reminder that if you want to follow Ricardo, all the links to his various social media platforms will be in the description of this podcast, and we highly recommend that you give him a follow. And before we get started, as always, just a reminder that if you enjoy the show, to leave us a little review on your podcast provider of choice, be that Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you know somebody you think might enjoy the show, feel free to spread the word. Word of mouth is a very valuable resource. And if you are enjoying it very much so, perhaps you've been listening to it for a long time and you want to go to the next step, we have a Patreon where you become a long ball football socio for just £1 a month. And there's a lot of fun stuff going on there. So, yeah, definitely check that out if you're interested. But, gentlemen, it's about time that we got stuck into this weekend's football. And we're going to start with Monday night's game as Sporting beat Estoril 3-1. A very important win for Sporting, who went 2-0 up. Estoril, a team in great form. Reduced the deficit to 2-1 before a late penalty saw Sporting seal the win and get all 3 points. Ricardo, I'll come to you first. It was a potentially a very tough game for Sporting because they've not been in the best form themselves, and Estoril are flying high at the moment with some great wins under their belt. I know for a fact that Estoril would have seen this as an opportunity to get a famous result against a big team. It wasn't to be, but it was a very well-deserved and important win for Sporting.
It was a game where we saw some of the ghosts almost appearing, the ghosts from the draws that Sporting has been having in the last few games within the last minutes, something that happened against AVS. It was a game where we saw a Sporting again conditionated by the injuries. They have a new midfielder with Eduardo Felicissimo and Zeno de Bass. Really good game by Zeno de Bass. His first half was amazing. That man is really good on short pass and long pass. Also the starting of Ricardo Gallo as a right back that would help during the build up. And a funny thing and really important by to Sporting is the appearance of Zeno de Bass as a midfielder, but on the right side, receiving the ball in front of the opposition's goal, so we can see the whole field and to analyze where he can put the best pass. And that's the best part of Zeno de Bas playing as a midfielder. If he can see the whole pitch, he is amazing and he's dangerous with his pass, especially his long pass to Vitor Gyökeres. It was a tough game. And it's real with a lot of personality, and we have to praise Ian Cathro for his passage to Surreal. A really tough passage at the beginning where he was trying to create a bit of a Steven Gerrard idea where the wingers try to defend inside and then the midfielders would wide up. That was his whole idea at the beginning, and then he tried to adapt to the club, to the philosophy of Estoril, and that was really important. And then we saw the Estoril really building it within the Primeira Liga, and now we saw a really good game, an Estoril trying to play with a flexible attacking, where João Carvalho would turn into a third man midfielder. And also as a third man attacker. And then we have Rafiki Keita, sometimes trying to push, trying to approach to Bekaui, really good player, by the way, playing as a false nine. So he would appear on that zone, but his idea was either to approach to the midfielders to have combinations or to attack the depth of the Sporting defensive line. Another thing that was important in Sporting is the fact that they have Francisco Trincão and Gyökeres,
Yeah, absolutely.
who are a really big difference. Even when they are tired, they are one of those players who really can turn a game. Even when the game is so tough that for them to create opportunities, They only need one, two opportunities, and they make the goal.
I
That's a
thought
true spotting.
Gyökeres was going to have to come off at one point. Only had that he got that knock on his left leg, I think, and then he was limping around for a while. And I was like, oh, they got to take him off, and they didn't. They kept him on. He was relentless. He was amazing. I did want to talk to you guys about De Bast in the midfield role because it's such a. I didn't ex obviously with Ruud Gullit coming in, there was going to be a change in system, but I didn't necessarily think that De Bast moving to midfield was going to be one of the things that came out of this managerial change. But it is incredible. He is on. There was, I mean, I was watching him and I was thinking like I always try and think of similar players, and Palhinha came to mind at one point. And then he did that scoop pass in between the two players, and I was like, "Oh my God, this is like Busquets!" It's like I just got overexcited. But he's—I know that's the thing that people always say about a classy defensive midfielder. He's obviously got so many talents, like you say, the passing is ridiculous. And I think actually that was what you pointed out there, was really interesting about him on that right-hand side of midfield, because then also you have Anasio on the left-hand side. You know, two options there, and you saw it in like. Matthijs Riis was constantly bombing forward. I was like, he was quite often ahead of Quenda, and I was, you know, always looking for the option of the runs. I found it like a really interesting sporting display because it did feel like there was a slight shift in system, as you mentioned, with the players coming in. I thought his guy had a good game, but I really found Matthijs Riis's role quite interesting and how far he was getting forward. And then, of course, I feel like, yeah, Felissimo deserves a bit of credit as well coming into that midfield. He got a yellow card about the 30-minute mark, and I think at that point there'd just been a decision gone against Sporting, and I just thought, oh, you know, maybe the refs. I could see him getting sent off, you know, seeing how like a bit of unluck, unluckiness for Sporting, but he did really well to see out the rest of the game. I actually, Albert, I think you said at the beginning of it was a really important one for Sporting. I think it was because you know this could have been a moment, but it puts them back top of the table. Yoker is back to good form, and if with a sort of a slight mismatched squad, they were able to sort of get a comfortable win. And so I think this was a very important win for Sporting.
Yeah, I completely agree. And on the one hand, I think Estoril would have been looking at this game thinking maybe it's a good opportunity to play Sporting at this time, but perhaps they caught them just on the crest of a wave, perhaps when Sporting are turning a corner because, you know, of course they have the injury problems. But in some ways, those injuries have almost allowed or forced Ruud Borges to maybe experiment a little bit more, and they have benefited in some ways. Like,
Yes.
for example, Felicissimo playing in midfield, I think it's a great opportunity for a young player, and he took the opportunity very well. So to have another young player that you can bring into the side is, of course, a positive. We also saw Diamant coming back into the team after suspension, and I thought that was a real positive at the back. Not only did he look good, but it allowed Inacio to kind of play a bit better alongside him as well. As long as Diamant can stay on the field without being sent off, I think he's just a very, very important player for Sporting. And Ricardo, like you mentioned, you know, they have luxury players still in Trincão and Victor Gyökeres. And again, Gyökeres is still not 100%, but even Victor Gyökeres at maybe 80% is one of the best players in the league. And you could still see him making those trademark runs in behind that we've seen him make so many times using his pace and his strength. And the Estoril captain playing at the back. Forgive me, his name escapes me, but had a very difficult game against Victor Gyökeres. And it was, yeah, there was for me, a notable gulf in quality between the two teams, which maybe might sound a little bit harsh, but I think Sporting were very comfortable. The last thing I'll add on Sporting, Ricardo Esguio played, and a lot of people like to make fun of Ricardo Esguio. Our friends at All Things Alvalade, I saw it on their Twitter earlier. Sporting are unbeaten in the league when Ricardo Esguio has started. So how about we start putting a little bit more respect on
I saw
Esguio's
that stat too.
name? I was going to make a slightly serious point on that in the sense that we've, you know, our friend of the podcast, Kevin Fernandez, has been very critical of, not very critical, but, you know, he's highlighted Diamandis' frailties and, you know, be that the mental side of the game or, you know. But with Esguio coming into the team, there is that bit more of experience. There's that sort of more experienced head that you don't get when Quaresma saves played there alongside Diamandis. So I think that actually was an interesting part of this game, was seeing Esguio in that line and seeing how it, I felt like it helped a little bit in the for the defense for Sporting.
Yeah, and I think lastly we should come back on to Estoril because not the result they would have wanted, of course. Ricardo, you spoke very well, I thought, about what they've done in order to get into this great run of form that they've been on. Of course, they'll be disappointed with the result, but I think they'll take a lot of positives from the performance despite the loss. And in fact, I think everyone by this point would have seen Ian Cathro's amusing post-match interview. He talked about
Big
cojones,
balls.
big balls, exactly. But he speaks very positively of this team, and clearly there's a great connection between the manager and the players at this moment.
I was going to say, I feel like Estoril are a couple of players away from being like a really strong team. I think, you know, Gaitán, this was only his third start for Estoril, but you know, with him and Carvalho in the wide attacking roles behind Grau, that's like top tier. And I thought Gaitán had a really good game in this one. And then you've got the midfield of Xhaka and Holmesgrove is so strong. The defensive line is. I like a lot, although they're perhaps better defensively than they are on the ball that Cafu may want. But and then maybe I do like Wagner Pina, but perhaps the wing backs are probably the weakest area because I feel like this, you know, Cafu has put together a tidy team who are comfortable on the ball and can get forward. It just seemed to be for me in this game particularly, it was that just seeing that final pass or cross was what was lacking really. And so like, you know, I know we rate Bagari. Maybe this was the wrong game for him, but you know, a couple more players that, you know, I feel like this is a really strong squad.
And the player that continues to impress me for Estoril is the goalkeeper, João Robles, who I know he's been around for a while, and he's even played. I think he played for Everton. I think when he signed, I kind of questioned whether he was the right signing, just because that kind of journeyman player. I tend to worry that their reasoning for coming to the Portuguese league, do they see it as maybe a sort of easy ride, an easier league than they're used to, and a way of kind of winding down their career? But he put in, for me, an excellent performance, as he has done on multiple occasions, and probably kept the scoreline down somewhat. So yeah, lots of positives for Estoril, despite the fact that they didn't get the result they want, and of course, a very important win for Sporting.
I had one more silly point to the end, and maybe this is more of a reflection about sketches than it is about the league. But seeing an Estoril Wagner Pina wearing yellow Skechers boots, I just couldn't. Something doesn't sit right with me. It's just
Listen,
like.
if they're good enough for the captain of our national team, Barney and Harry Kane, then we can
It just
whatever.
surprised me that he's come over to Portugal. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm still not used to seeing Skechers boots on the pitch. It's just, yeah, no matter what country, I just, yeah.
Yeah, well, we'll let him off if he continues to play well. Gents, let's move on to our next game. Talk about Porto, who got a 2-0 win away at Arouca. It was an important win again for Porto, especially for the new manager, Martin Anselmi. We know that he's not perhaps had the results that he would have wanted since he's come in, although we're starting to see the team take shape. Perhaps also in this game, maybe there was an element of fortune with the penalty that was awarded to them, which might have been a little bit soft in some people's eyes. Equally, with Ruka having a goal ruled out late on. But from Porto's perspective, a solid performance, 3 points, and very important, not just for the team, Ricardo, but also for the manager who's obviously come into a team, not been able to make many signings, and is still trying to get his ideas across. But I think we're starting to see his ideas more and more with the more games that he's in charge.
He's more of a stubborn guy because he has his ideology and he does not want to change. And what I like about him is that he really understands the game. And we're starting to see how he wants to go from game to game. In this game, we saw Marcano as the leader of the defensive line, which I think might be what Porto needs at the moment. Sometimes they can shape into, for example, putting a Tomás Pérez as a libero on that position. It depends on the opposition, what they want to do. If they want a libero that can turn into a midfielder, okay, you'll have to go with Tomás Pérez, or maybe a Stocky like they did against Maccabi. Tel Aviv, or for example, Alan Varela, testing on that position. But if you want more stability, maybe Marcano might be the key that they need, because they've been having some problems when trying to do the build-up phase. We saw that against Roma. It was a really tough game for the center backs with a lot of mistakes. And then we saw some other games where they are completely confident. The example of Otavio, he really did an interesting game against Arouca, because he's so fast, he can compensate the errors that he makes along the game. And also, it was a game where we saw a lot of controversy by the fact that they lost Mora, even without the game beginning, which is a really, really bad news. But they are bad news for Porto to lose him for, I think it's 2 games with, and they had to adapt. And the funny thing about this game is, we thought when the game started that it would be Fabio Vieira starting as the midfielder from the right. And he just stayed on the center left side of the midfield, and it was Eustáquio doing that phase. So they would turn into a four, like a 3-4-3, with Eustáquio and Gonçalo Borges doing different things. Gonçalo Borges would try to go more with more width, and then Eustáquio would play more on the interior, with João Mário doing the overlaps. However, on the second half, and this was something that Anselmi really highlighted on the press conference after the game, he tried to put the team into a 3-5-2. So you would have the three midfielders, Eustáquio, Fabio Vieira, and Alan Varela, trying to culminate to the attack. And Gonçalo Borges joins Samu to attack the defensive line. And I saw some positive things about that. I do think Gonçalo Borges still has a lot to learn, because he's one guy that he really tends to go to dribble to another dribble, and he just lacks decision making, which is something really important and something that Porto needs at the moment. And it's what made the difference, because when Fabio Vieira turned into the right side, it was when Porto really took the game to another level. And it's when Porto really could close the game. And that's why he scored that amazing goal.
And it was a fantastic goal. And I think the more we see Fabio Vieira playing well, scoring for Porto, I think, well, as a neutral, I would be delighted to see him playing at the same level that we saw him before he moved to Arsenal, which I think he's not too far away from doing. Barney, what did you think of Porto? I don't know how much you've seen him this season, but it was a for me it was a more impressive performance than we've seen in recent weeks, and I think they didn't look in too much trouble.
Yeah, I think we're seeing the effects of the amount of time now Anselmi's had on the team. I think Fabio Vieira is a really interesting player because he feels very important. He feels like he's growing with this project as well. And it just seems to be a shame that he's not going to be here next year because, like, I feel like he fits a
Well,
couple of
you never
positions.
know.
Well, yes, you can hope. We can hope, but I just yeah, it's because he feel yeah, he's become a really useful player for Anselmi. I am interested in the midfield, and I think Ricardo's right. It's interesting to see how that second half played out with because I instinctively it feels like Eustáquio and Varela aren't the right players for this system to be playing alongside each other. I don't think they complement each other particularly well. They're perhaps too similar in profile, So yeah, it was, so that adjustment he made was interesting to see. I know we've got Ricardo on, who's at the beginning of the show, said he wants to talk positively about the refs, but I just felt like the penalties did feel soft. I was, it just doesn't, it didn't feel right. And then, of course, the disallowed Arouca goal as well. It just felt like it just, I don't know. It did feel a bit unfair to Aruka. And I actually, to be fair, I think the point I'm trying to make is I felt Aruka were pretty good in this game. And if one or two things had gone their way, you know, this could be a complete, perhaps a different result, because they weren't blown away by Porto, and you know, they really stuck in it with the game. And they, I thought Jason highlighted himself well as per usual. Probably should have scored on a couple of his chances. But yeah, I think we are seeing an improving Porto, but perhaps the few decisions helped them on their way to this win.
Ricardo, what's your opinion on Arouca? Because we've seen from them improved form recently. Obviously, they had an amazing season under Daniel Souza, and it didn't go too well after that. But we've started to see them play a lot better under Vasco Siebra. What's your opinion of them as a team with the manager that they have now?
Well, I did enjoy it when they had Gonzalo Garcia as a coach. I really liked the way they played, but I do have to admit that the managerial change to Vasco Seabra, which is a coach that I really like, really improve Arouca for the moment that they are right now. They have really good players. Taichi Fukui, amazing midfielder, can play as an eight, as a 10, also in a winger, at the winger. And then they have Morlaisila, who can shapeshift within the game from a winger to an attacking midfielder. He's really intelligent tactically and technically speaking. And then we have Jason Ramazzotti, as you were talking, a really technical player. I don't know how he ended up here. A guy that used to play La Liga and then turned here. It's something that we've been watching it now. So we have a lot of players from Spain coming in. Normally we would see the Brazilians coming in, and now we are seeing a lot of Spanish players, even from the second division, for example, to Moreirense. They have now the Cedric Denguia. We also have Ronaldo Claus, Forense. They had Alex Milan and another player. We are seeing this pattern of Spanish players coming to Arouca. But again, as you were asking me, it's a team that really likes to have the ball. And then they have a really good player, an experienced player like David Simon with a gifted left foot. He's a
Sorry,
really
one of
good.
my favorite players is the only reason I'm
Yes, yes, yes,
laughing.
yes. Of the top five, he's a really good player. And something that we saw on this game was the idea was to attract the pressure from Porto to players like David Simão and Taichi, for them to then just scoop the ball to the defensive line so that Jason and Treza could take the ball and try to pass to Dylan. It was some sort of the mouse and cat thing. So they would attract and then they would put the ball. And they tried like three, four times effectively. And then Porto really adapt to that idea. And that's when Porto really build up and really grow up within the game. But it's a really good team. They had a good game against, it was Sporting. One of the last few games, I think, and it's a team to follow to the rest of the league because they are really growing with Vasco Sierra on command.
I think Dylan Nand and the Uruguayan striker has been a good pickup, because you know, obviously they've had some great strikers in the past, but he's arrived from
His
Uruguay.
goal when he had a goal out for offside, and it was one of those where I thought, oh, that was well offside. And then when they showed the VAR, it was a lot closer than it looked. So I think he's a very interesting player.
Yeah, they did. And you know, once again, highlights their scouting ability to pick up good talent. But yeah, I agree with everything that Ricardo's just said. Then I think I'm growing to like. I had my doubts about Seabra, but I'm growing to like this his this Arouca team. I think they're playing really well, and I like the way, Taichi Fukui in particular. The playing him slightly deeper, I really like. I think that's in a really good mood.
Yeah,
Another
and I
thing
think
about.
another thing about Ruka is that they are really good at scouting and a bit exotic, by the way. I don't know if you remember Odaydabac, the guy from Yes, of
Palestina.
course.
And And on that same year, they hired, for example, guys from Israel and other nationalities. They have a different approach to the markets, and they bring really good players.
We should give a little shout out to one of our listeners, Graham Moore, who I know is an Aberdeen fan, where Ode Dabag is currently playing in Aberdeen. So
Really good player.
yes, but yeah, I agree. I think the thing I'm enjoying about Aruka at the moment is that they've always been, as we said, great at scouting, bringing in interesting players. At the start of the season, we didn't see the best of those players. We didn't see the best of the team. And, for better or worse, they changed the manager. It does look like Seabra has been a positive change. And now it is enjoyable to start seeing the manager get the best out of those players. And we're starting to see the more interesting players come to the front, which is what we've always enjoyed about following a team like Aruka. So as Ricardo says, a team to keep an eye on for the rest of the season. Hopefully, fingers crossed, they keep the team together and keep the manager, and they can build something quite interesting. We're going to move on very quickly because it was a fairly routine win, so we won't dwell on this game too long. But Ricardo, I just want to ask you one question specifically about Porto. I'm just interested to get your opinion. What do you think they need in terms of maybe players, maybe something else, in order to just take that next step up to being back to fighting for the title in a serious way? Because at the moment, for me, they're just that step below Benfica and Sporting.
I'd say what they need more at the moment would be consistency within the players and also time. And why do I say this? Because they are facing a really they are facing a lot of changes within the club. The coming up of André Villas-Boas to a presidential role, and then they are changing and trying to save the club financially. And so you have to take a different approach to the market. You have to take players that are not ready at the moment to explode. The case of Samu, who is a really good player but still has a lot to learn. And we are seeing how he develops from game to game. At the first, when he arrived, he was a player more of a attacking, and he's trying to communicate more with his colleagues. But at the moment, and he's trying to improve, and we see those improvements. Another thing that would be important for Porto, of course, would be some players on defense. I do think they need a more stability. A centre back that can play a good ball playing defender, which is something that it's really important at the moment for Porto to break the lines, especially when they are playing against difficult teams and well-organized teams with a 5-4-1 or a 4-4-2, really compact, would be interesting and important. And another thing they really need is a good Diogo Costa, a consistent Diogo Costa, which is something that we haven't seen this year.
No, all very, very interesting points. And yeah, I think with Porto, it definitely feels like perhaps this season is a big transitional season. So yeah, whether they can bring in some interesting players over the summer and give the manager a full pre-season to work with the team, maybe next season we'll see them a slightly different side. Although by no means out of the title race yet. So let's not completely rule them out. Gentlemen, let's move on to our next game. Very interesting game from this weekend. For me, a game I would have recommended in advance people to watch, as Rio Ave beat Braga 2-1 at home. It seemed that Braga had really been getting their season back on track with a positive run of form, but they did slip up in this instance. It was goals from Clayton and Jonathan Panzo, which gave Rio Ave a win. And of course, Braga weren't helped by a calamitous goalkeeping mistake from Lukas Hornacek early on, which did gift Rio Ave the first goal. Braga never fully recovered despite a spirited performance. They did score the equaliser, but they were always kind of open to conceding, which they did late on, and it ended in defeat. Ricardo, for me, this game was the type of game the type of result that I think Rio Ave would have been hoping for at the beginning of the season when they had all this new investment, they signed all these new players, and they would have been optimistic about getting these kind of results. Well, we've had to wait a little while to see it. They haven't always been as good as we thought they might be with the new signings, but they are improving a lot for me under Petit, and this was a very good result and a very good performance from Rio Ave. Like I said, the first goal, we have to be honest, it was a big mistake. It was a gift. But from that point on, I still think they were probably overall the better team and deserved the win.
Well, that's the problem about the investments from Marinakis. They really brought a lot of players, and those players need time to adapt. And we do have to highlight the positive things because they really need the financial parts of the investment. And also, Marinakis is bringing a lot of good players that would not have the necessary time when playing on Olympiacos, the case of Andreas Nettoy, or at Nottingham Forest. Also, the fact that they have this connection with Marinakis brought Omar Richards, which is a really good left back
Very good player.
for Primeira Liga. And we are seeing the progress that this team is facing. We see players, they are highlighting within the game, the case of Tiknash, a really good defensive midfielder, the Turkish player. It was a game where Rio Ave really showed that they are a really good, difficult team when they are playing at home. A home where they, under the command of Luis Freire, they really had a really good run. At home games, and we are seeing again that thing because they're really difficult to game, and they also have a player up front, Clayton, who scores a lot of goals, and it's really good for a team like this.
Maybe it's
Absolutely, Paul.
maybe they're so good at home because the pitch isn't the best, or I don't know if Hornacek would blame the pitch for the slip, but because that Clayton goal was,
On that, Barney, I think I've watched the replay multiple times. He tries to be too clever. For me, I
do you
think it's
think?
obvious. He tries to almost dummy and do a little flick up. And I think in my opinion, I think he has to take the blame for
No, I'm not blaming the pitch
that.
really. But I think Clayton, as shambolic as that goal was for Braga's point of view, Clayton is, he's having a really good season. I think he is one of the better strikers in this league.
And
I
sorry,
think.
Barney, to interrupt again, but also worth pointing out that the opportunity, despite the mistake, comes from him pressing from the front. So it didn't come out of completely out of nowhere.
And it was a great run as well, that ball was put through to him.
Yeah.
No, he's a really good striker. I don't know what it was about. I think it was maybe it's the stadium or where the microphones are, but you could really hear the ball being hit in this game. And he can thump it, can't he? Like Clayton, he can absolutely hit it. But yeah, I think I was critical at the beginning of the season of Rio Ave's squad building, saying, but I think we are really seeing something now. I mean, Ricardo's mentioned a lot already of the players. For me, Albert, did you guys see Panzo's post-match interview in English?
No.
It was just a short one, and the reporter just asked a few simple questions, but he was so happy. And even when he scored, you could see he was beaming. I think, was he with celebrating with Abby? I can't remember, but
Yeah,
another one.
Nelson Abbey, yeah.
But he was so happy, and I know he's played. I think he was in France before. He obviously got that move to Nottingham Forest. I don't know if he would have thought that this rather, do you go to Olympiacos or Rio Ave? I've end up at Rio Ave. If that would have felt like, but when you've got players like that who look really just pleased to be playing, and he seemed to really enjoy himself, I think that's really good. I also wanted to highlight the goalkeeper Mitster because I think he's been a really good pickup.
Phenomenal.
And a lot of quite a few saves in this game from Braga. So yeah, it's I this 11 that was put out by Petit, who is it, was he in the stands? I think he's been banned, but because I think yeah. But this 11 put out, that it feels that looked good, and Aguirre as well. Is it Oli Polo or Polman? Yeah, it feels like the team's settling, and they are looking good.
Yeah, I agree with that a lot, and I think it probably has taken time for them to work out the best 11 with all the new players. But Barney, you're so right to point out when you actually run through the 11 that started in that game, it's a team full of quality. There's a lot of quality players. Like you said, the goalkeeper Mishta, fantastic. I'm looking at it now. The right back Rousset has been great all season. Nelson Abe, Jonathan Panza, Ollie Poulman, really nice, really interesting midfield player who's done very well. Tignaz, Aguilera, Clayton, and of course, a long-time listener of the podcast, and one of my favourite players, Kiko Bondo. So, wonderful player. So great quality in that team, and it might have taken a little while to get it to gel, but now it's gelling. I think there's a real opportunity there for that team.
And sorry, it's not only the players coming from within Olympiacos or Nottingham Forest, but those acquisitions they made, like Kiko Bondozi, like Andre Lewis from Estrella, you know, like
Fun
there's
to
there has
watch.
yeah there are
Definitely.
smart signings there that they've made.
Absolutely. Although a less positive result for Braga's perspective, of course. Ricardo, it feels to me like there has been a lot of changes at Braga. Like when we look at the 11, we're seeing new faces. Not necessarily all new. I mean, when you look at a player like Roger Fernandes, a player that we've seen for a long time, you know, he started so young, and a great player. But still quite a young player. That we're seeing more of players like Garbi on the wing. We're seeing more of players like Gorby as well in midfield. So I've been quite critical of Braga at times this season. I've been fairly critical of Carlos Carvajal because I feel like Braga have underachieved. But I'm interested in your opinion because there are new faces, there are young players, and they have had issues whereby senior players and experienced players haven't performed very well. We saw them lose Mateus in January. I think it was widely understood that it was his time to move on. But I'm more interested in your opinion on Braga because it was a good run of form before this, but overall the season has not been spectacular.
Not only the players, but also the tactical approach. We are seeing a Braga with different faces in tactical approach. First, when Carvalhal arrived at Braga, he tried to test a three-man defense with two pure wingers doing the job offensively and defensively. He would play Gabri Martinez from the left side, and then he would put Roger on the other side. And we would see João Ferreira pairing with the two center backs and trying to create some sort of dynamic where the wingers would provide width and also have some technical players within the interior zones. And now we are seeing a different face from Braga, a Braga who lost some of his key figures. Mateus left for Ajax, as you were talking. And I do think of course, it's not some good news, but it's some necessary thing for other guys to step in. The case of
I agree.
Hornacek, it's not just because of this mistake, but he's a really good goalkeeper, and he's really promising. Despite this game, he's really promising, and it has saved him in other games. We are seeing also the case of Francisco Chissumba for the Braga, who had a really bad problem with left backs. They have tried, I don't know, three, four or five guys. They started with Vidovic, the Polish player. They turned then to Yuri Ribeiro. They tried the case of Gabri Martinez as a wing back on the three-man system. And now with Francisco Chissumba, they found a more stable position, a more stable guy to do that role. And also Roger, I'd say he's the best player apart from Ricardo Horta, of course. And it's a Braga who probably didn't make the right choices at the beginning, but now it's evolving with Carvalhal. They really brought up some necessary guys. The case of Ramon Navarro, who is I'd say in Spanish a matador, a guy that really does the job when he's within the penalty zone. And he really showed that on the goal. He received the ball and then he turned to score. And also the fact that Gabi might appear more, turning sometimes into a fourth man on the midfield, and Chissouma doing the overlaps. The only bad news is the fact that Roger is not playing for the next games. He's a really good player, and Braga will face Porto next week.
Yeah, is it like 6 weeks he's out for or something like that? It's a long time, and
Exactly.
that does feel significant to me because I don't know, I feel like he was in particular is quite important for the wingers that they've got. I think Garbi is developing. I don't think he's quite there yet, so it'd be interesting to see how he progresses the rest of the season. I think I don't know. I'm still not sure how to feel about Braga. It does feel a bit like Carvajal's sort of trying to go back to basics a little bit, like Ricardo said that. I think that experiment at the beginning of the season didn't work, but it does look a little bit more settled with that back four. And I agree with you. Shisumba's been a. I've enjoyed watching him play. I just yeah, I it's I, it always surprises me how high up the table there are, despite and how many points they've got. I don't know what it is. I'm struggling to describe it, so I'll let you guys talk. But there is just something that's still niggling at me. Although I will go back to that Navarro goal because that felt good. I thought that was a really good finish, really good play from him, and seeing him in this Braga team is one of those transfers that felt really made sense and could really come off.
Well, it's where he was meant to go in the first place. If we all look back to that transfer saga from, was it a year ago now or 2 years ago? But anyway, yes, it was it's good to see him back and playing well. Like you both say, it's you see those strikers try it a lot where they receive the ball with the back to goal and they try to turn and shoot, and it never works. But this time it worked and it was a
And the ball
great
was
finish.
bouncing as well. It sat up a little bit, and yeah, it was a good
So
finish.
yeah. And as Barney says, Braga are currently 8 points clear of fifth place, despite what I refer to as a disappointing season. So clearly, it can't be all that bad. Guys, I'm aware we don't have loads of time left, so let's try and do two more games quickly from teams a little bit further down the table. And a game that I know caught a lot of people's eye, a result that caught a lot of people's eye, was Boavista 1, Santa Clara nil, a huge win for Boavista, Lito Vidigal's first win as manager of the club. The club's first win in 15 games, and Boavista's first home win in almost exactly 1 year, which is an incredible statistic, and an incredible moment for all those fans who go to the Estadio de Besa every week, despite not seeing their team win there. For nearly exactly 1 year. We did see how much it meant to the manager after the game. Lito Vidigal in tears, overcome with emotion, which was quite touching. And of course, the fans were jubilant in the stands. But Ricardo, let's come back to reality. Does this win give the club much more of a chance of survival? Did you see anything in this performance that makes you think that maybe Lito Vidigal will be able to turn it around?
Well, I think the major part is not only the win, but also the guys that he really brought on February. That was the key part to the battle to maintenance. It was a tough win against probably one of the best teams this year, a really good team coming out by Vasco Matos, the Santa Clara team. And it was a game that probably we wouldn't thought that Boavista would win. We know the difficulties they are having, despite having some new guys, but they are a different team. They have spirits, they have fans, they have a lot of things. Even when they don't have quality players, now they have a little bit more of quality, the case of Van Ginkel, who, despite not having the physicality of another times, he still can manage to make a difference. And also, when you pair him with guys like Reizinho and Bojanic, if served with quality, he really can bag some goals. It was a tough game, a game They really came with a goal from Listov, another signing they had. That really brought tears to the fans, tears to Litvi Digal, and a chance to save themselves from another battle to relegation. I do think it's still possible. I would appoint maybe to the playoffs, but when it's mathematical possibility, when it's
Exactly.
possible, they can still dream. It is possible, and it was a really huge win for them.
Absolutely. And 7 points away from automatic safety as things stand. So, by no means an insurmountable feat. Barney, what did you make of the team? I mean, we saw a lot of the new faces that we've been waiting to see.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think it was. Although Listov had a good game and got the goal, I don't think that any of the new faces particularly showed anything incredible. I think as Ricardo was describing, it's more just this, something's happening now, and I think you felt that in the stadium. It always amazes me about how many fans they get in that stadium. You know, it's a big stadium and some of the stands are empty, but when you compare it to the rest of the league, you know that they do draw in a big crowd despite their struggles and everything that's been going on. I think ultimately, you know, the win, the scenes afterwards, it feels so significant. It feels like, you know, there's a belief, there's a purpose now. You just saw it in some of the players. Salvador Agra who had a really good game and has been a really good player for them for the last few years. You know, how serious he was at the end of the game, you know, getting right in his teammates' faces as well. Like, you know, they all know that what the job is. I'm fully on board. I'm fully feel like it's gonna happen. Like it feels special. I just hope it continues. I think the players like Ginkel and Kone, you know, will add a bit of quality. It did feel like that attack in moments was a bit clunky. Bosnic and didn't sort of wait for runs, and he would try to take a shot on himself. That might get that improve over time. I like the new formation. I think you know, Agra right wing back, and I really like João Silva on the other side. I think that works well for them, and brings out the best in those players. Albert, I did want to say a quick thing on Santa Clara before we move on.
Please do, yeah.
As good as they've been, and we've all praised them a lot this season. I do think it's interesting what. Maybe the departures aren't that significant, but you know, Safira and Klishman left. Klishman's just gone on loan to Japan. I mentioned it before about their sort of lack of reinforcements. The Matos staying seemed huge, but then to not sort of back him to push on that bit further, I wonder if they will drift a bit now. Perhaps, you know, we will see a slightly less impressive Santa Clara. I don't know. Still a lot of talented players in there. And obviously keeping Matos is it was a huge. I've like I said a few weeks ago. It's almost unbelievable that he stayed. But yeah, I do have a slight feeling that we might see Santa Clara fall a little bit for the rest of the season.
Well, it's always hard for those newly promoted teams to sustain because we see it a lot, don't we? Newly promoted teams who start the season very strongly, build some momentum, there's a lot of positivity around the team. It's very hard to sustain that for a whole season. Perhaps that's what we're seeing with Santa Clara now. I'm not going to dwell on Santa Clara too much because, in fairness, this was not an easy game. It was, you know. They can have an off day. They weren't fantastic. I don't think they were considerably worse than Boavista either. It was quite an even match. So, yeah, maybe we'll judge them in there over their next coming few games rather than this particular one. And guys, I want to touch on one more game before we go because this was a particularly enjoyable game for me, personally. A surprise but welcome win for Nacional as they beat Famalicão 2-1 at home. Famalicão had been, in my opinion, in excellent form. I think they definitely were favourites to win the game. They did also play well despite going a goal down. They dominated the majority of the match, but they couldn't scored a second goal and they conceded a very, very late 94th minute header from Labadie, which saw Nacional get a vital 3 points for a side that I think were not expected to stay up. this season in Nacional, and yet they continue to get some good results. They continue to outperform some teams with probably more resources and better players to keep themselves away from the relegation battle for now. Ricardo, Thiago Margarido is a name that a lot of people talk about. He's got the attention of quite a few people, perhaps as a manager with a bright future. But what do you think it is that he's done with this team to impress so many people?
He is a really promising coach. And to talk about what you are asking me, I would take you back to something that their president said. I don't know, I think it was on January or something close, when they were on the verge of the last places. And the president came to the press and he said, "It doesn't matter if the agents are calling. Thiago Margarido is my coach. If something is bad, it's the players, and I will send off the players that do not belong here, that don't add nothing to the team, and Thiago Margarido will stay." And it was a really strong sentence by him, for a coach who is really good and took them from the second division to the first division. And after that, we saw Nacional really evolving to another level, trying and bagging some points, some draws, some victories, some necessary victories, by the way, like this one against Famalicão. And we see also a good technical approach to play a good football, despite not having probably the best players to it. They were probably, and they are probably still one of the worst teams at the first division, but they have some players that really transcend this team. The case of Luis Tevez and Daniel Peña. Daniel Peña, who is really doing some really good games, appearing a lot of times into the attacking zone to score some goals. And they are really taking this team to another level. Also, the fact that Zé Vitor is bagging also some good appearances. He really had an amazing performance against FC Porto when they won. I don't know if you remember. It is a team who you can see that they are evolving and they are getting further and further from the relegation zone, which I think is something that is possible. And also, I would like for them to maintain, because I like the fact that they are from the islands, and the fact that they have Thiago Margarido, that is a really good promising coach. I have some coaches that I do love, the case of Margarido, also Luis Freire from Vitória. I do like Daniel Sousa, but hasn't been the best season for him, I have to admit. I don't know what is happening, but Thiago Margarido is one to watch for the next years. He's a really good coach with a really good ideology that really evolves the midfielders and has a really good way of playing. They had a really good second division run with Gustavo Silva and Chicho Ramírez as the main players, who are now at Vitória. And they are a good team, a team that was battling for the relegation zone, and also banging more and more wins for them to not go to the last games, still with the possibility of going to the second division.
Yeah, and Barney, a lot's been made this week of the fact that only four clubs have not changed their manager so far this season. Of course, Margarita's one of those managers, so I guess it's another argument for the idea that keeping your manager and trusting the manager and giving them time will yield results, because I think that's what we've seen. They were close to being relegated, and now we're starting to see them slowly move away from those other teams around them who've perhaps made that decision to change the manager, panicked a little bit more, but Nacional have been more consistent.
Yeah, I think if he does manage to keep them up, that it's got to be one of the biggest achievements of the season. No disrespect to Nacional, but they have never been blessed with a particularly rich squad in terms of talent. I think this season is a good example, although I'm so glad Ricardo highlighted Peña because he's been my boy from the beginning, and I think he's really starting to shine. But for me, I've always just been so impressed with their defense. Vitor and Ulises, I think, are just, I don't know. There was moments in this game where, like, maybe it was luck, but just like little touches they made just to knock the ball over the top, and yeah. I mean, on very very quickly on Famalicão, because I think that we've talked a lot about in the season, but Oscar Aranda is such a fun player to watch. He was
Very good
just,
player, yeah.
it was basically just him, really, wasn't it? Just him trying to get
I
shots
still
away in terms.
remember his debut. I was
Yeah. Oh,
there.
yeah.
It
Was
was,
that
I think it was,
1-0 against Braga? He scored the
it was
winner.
a game against Braga.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was one or two goals. I think Afonso Rodriguez also scored on
Right.
that
Okay.
game.
Yeah.
And I saw that guy and I thought, damn, he's a lazy bowler. He's really good on the ball. Because he has that funny way of walking and going with the ball. It's like he doesn't want that, or he's not with his head on the game, but and then he has some dribble and then he passes. He's really good. Technically speaking, he is really good.
But it's weird how he's been used this season, because at some points he's been used as a striker. In this game on the left, I thought I like him or coming inside. I don't know. He's been asked to do a few positions for Famalicão, so but yeah,
Yes.
he a goal in this game, and he looked good. He looked good.
Yes, Armando Evangelista really tried him as a false nine for a lot of games. Now we are seeing a more inverted winger vibe, also with the possibility of turning into an attacking midfielder, and he is driving. He's driving goals.
Yeah, Ricardo, just quickly on Famalicão before we end up. Interesting team for me, because we always expect quite a lot from them. And I think at the beginning of the season, as Barney mentioned, we spoke a lot about them at the beginning of the season. We were quite excited by the squad that they built. I found it interesting that two of the players that we were most excited about, Gil Dias and Rochinha, both started on the bench today. And instead, we have Soriso and Aranda, who are kind of running the show, running the game. So it's a team that has had to, perhaps in a similar way to Rio Ave, has had to find its best team. We know they've also changed manager midway through the season, so they've had to deal with that as well. But as I alluded to at the beginning of this section, they've been in good form recently, and I feel like they are starting to connect and become a very interesting team again.
I'd say I enjoyed more when they were commanded by Armando Evangelista, let me
I
just
agree.
say.
Yes,
Another important thing was the injury from Cerezo at the beginning of the season that
True.
really ended up the momentum that he was having at the moment. And then Armando had to adapt. So he tried to put Gil Dias on that position and also Aranda as a false striker, as a false nine. And now we are seeing a more complete lineup because Hugo can play and can choose whatever roles he wants to put within this game. If he wants an inverted winger with a left foot, he can put Gil Dias on the right. If he wants a more fluid game, probably Cerezo, that he goes more for the dribble from the exterior side, more as a winger rather than an inverted winger. It's a team full of quality, but we're still lacking that family count from the times of João Pedro Sousa. They were a sensation, and we are still expecting for Famalicão to take that next step and probably try to go to the Europa League or to the Conference League. And we are not seeing it at the moment.
No, it's not always easy for them as well, because I know they do lose players. They're one of those teams that are a victim of their own success, perhaps, because when those players explode into life and take their headlines, then they often they leave them. Simon Banza is a good example, and Pedro Gonçalves as well. Loads of players who they've lost in recent years. So yeah, it can be tough to to gain some consistency. Guys, I think we will leave it there for this week's show. We've covered an awful lot, and we would, of course, like to say once again a huge thank you to Ricardo for joining us. Ricardo, thank you so much for your time. Once again, a reminder that if you want to follow Ricardo and all the projects that he's involved in, you can do so by clicking on the links in the description of this podcast. But Ricardo, just like to say thank you so much.
Thank you too. It was an amazing experience, my first one, and I really enjoyed it. And it was a really spent time talking about Portuguese football. Thank you all for this. And thank you to everyone who was listening. Also.
Absolutely. A big thank you to Barney and to everybody listening. And yeah, just leaves me to say we'll see you next week.